The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
These are the sounds of crushed souls. The sounds of despair from former radio personalities, languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet, but their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio, and you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
If you're tired and feeling lonely.
Every day, prominent Republicans across the country tell us that Trump was responsible for the attack on the Capitol.
I do think he was responsible. I think the whole idea was to intimidate Congress.
President Trump is responsible for provoking the events of the day.
You said it is clear that President Trump's rhetoric and actions contributed to the insurrection. Do you stand by that statement?
100%.
But sadly, these same Republicans say they will vote for him again.
You're voting for someone who you believe tried to subvert the peaceful transfer of power.
The answer to the question is yes.
Don't you support him for president, even though you believe he contributed to an insurrection?
Yeah, me and 51% of America.
I said that I would support President Trump if he were the nominee, and he obviously is going to be the nominee of our party.
These Republicans are suffering from partisan derangement syndrome.
You don't see this as the definition of putting party over country?
No.
At this point in the ad, I would tell you to call this number so you can help these deranged partisan Republicans. But sadly, they're too far gone. Mm.
Republican voters against Trump. RVAT.org is their website. Instead of beginning today with a funny parody song, that's the best thing I've seen. So, new ad just put out by this group. Republican voters against Trump. They're the ones who did the one last week that we saw that was along the lines of, Trump couldn't get a job at a fast food joint because of his, arrests and hopefully coming convictions. So anyway, that one was good. This one's better. And speaking of Bill Barr, he's in the news today. Oh, there's a lot in the news today. So welcome to a brand new week. Yes. Jonathan Larson is here. It's Monday, after all, in the tradition of Rachel Maddow and Jen Psaki and John Stewart. Jonathan Larson and the fucking news on Mondays. And there's plenty to talk about. We'll get to him. And the news, such as it is. This, that I try to tune out over the weekend. And I had mentioned on Thursday when Howie Klein was here that Neil Young was in town and I really wanted to try to go see him. Well, we didn't. And I'm devastated because, there's a website, setlist.fm. And people, after a concert, will go and put in the songs that the artist played. And so I was able to see exactly the songs that Neil Young performed on Saturday night that I was not there for. And many of my favorites. I mean, everybody knows This Is Nowhere. My God, I'll never get to see him do that live again. But then again, I have I didn't spend $200 that we didn't have. Number one and number two, my foot was killing me. So those of you who've been following the saga, I thought I had dropped something heavy on the other foot and I thought it was, it had fallen over. So I didn't know. And I wound up going to urgent care. Then I went to my doctor. The urgent care doctor thought it was gout, but the blood test didn't say I had elevated levels of uric acid or whatever it is that tells it. Anyway, long story short, I finished the medicine that the first doctor prescribed And it was held sort of at bay while I was taking the medicine. But the minute I finished it, the foot started really hurting again and swelled up. So I was really out of commission this weekend. And this morning, I made the appointment on Friday, got in with a podiatrist today. And she's like, yeah, I'm sorry to tell you, it is gout. And it was where I thought it was like a fat old man's disease. She said, nope. I have patients in their 20s and 30s. We don't really know why it happens. It is sort of related to arthritis, mostly strikes the big toe joint, but it can spread. It can spread to the other foot. It can spread to other joints. It can go into your elbows and knees and other toes and spine. Oh my God, this thing better not spread. So the new medication is going to be delivered. Is my audio low? Somebody in the chat room said, is my audio low? I'm looking at you guys to see if what you think. Might be a little low. Maybe I could boost it a little bit. I don't know. Anyway, I think we're okay. I think we can. So that's the latest on this edition of the Mal Ladies. Anybody want to join in, feel free to call 954-889-6410. The Mal Ladies, where the ladies sit around and talk about everything that ails us. No, we're not going to do that today. But whenever I do host an edition of the Mal Ladies, I get so much email. But, you know, more important things happened this weekend. And we're going to go over a lot of it with Jonathan. You know, the story that really, and again, I tune out during the weekends. I do art. You see my lovely guitar behind me? It's finished now. You're not seeing the whole thing. But that was a wood cutout of the guitar body that I found in somebody's bulk trash sitting by the side of the road. And I transformed it. I made the neck. So it's kind of cool. Just so you know, the new business to sell some of this artwork that I've made is coming soon. I'm building the website. The intensive part is, you know, photographing everything and posting it all and pricing it and figuring out shipping and stuff like that. So that's what I'm doing in my spare time. When I'm not making art, I'm trying to figure out how to post it. But the website's coming along. I shared a sneak peek with some of you guys in the chat room on Friday while we were listening to Marcy Wheeler. So on Friday, what Marcy and I really talked about was the insanity we witnessed, well, we heard anyway, on Thursday with the Supreme Court and that hearing on so-called absolute immunity for the former guy. And if you feel like we're living in an episode of The Twilight Zone or, you know, the previews for The Handmaid's Tale, we're there. We are there. And if you listen to only one thing from Friday's show with Marcy Wheeler, you should actually listen to the whole thing because she's brilliant. I could listen to Marcy all the time. And I love talking with her. But at the end, we were both on the same page. And that page is that each and every one of us needs to figure out what we can do, not just to bitch and moan about what's happening, but to reach out to others, to convince one person who might be on the fence. It's like, I don't know, this economy. It's not the economy. The economy, by all measures, is doing really well, the best in the world. I know it doesn't help you when you're looking at, you know, gas that's inching up to $4.50 a gallon, as it is here in Arizona now. Or, you know, the cost of groceries. I don't really know because David does the grocery shopping. But, you know, I know that it's getting higher. What you need to do is find, and I've shared a few graphics of facts, of, you know, meme kind of facts that show it's not inflation, it's corporate greed, because all these companies, the big ones, are raising their prices. They're shrinking the boxes and the jars and the amount of stuff you get when you purchase ketchup or mayonnaise or apple juice or whatever. The containers are smaller, but the price tags are higher. And it's got nothing to do with inflation. It's got to do with corporate greed. Their profits are exploding. So if I could have this government do anything, it would be to put some price limits on, to say you cannot gouge the American people. I don't know how that would work. It's 5:05 in LA. Jesus Christ. Yeah, that's kind of crazy. So the other, of course, story, you know, I'm a dog lover. Before the pandemic happened and in my spare time, I embraced all this art stuff. Well, for the year leading up to the pandemic, on weekends, I was at the Broward County, Florida Animal Shelter. That's what I did. Every Saturday and Sunday, I would go there and work with the dogs. I would take them out. I would walk them. I would get to know them. And when people would come in looking for a dog, my strength was in matching the families with the animal. And I had quite a few successful adoption placements. I loved doing that. So when I heard Christy Noem, who's been angling to be the former guy's running mate, I won't say vice president because he cannot be president. So whoever his running mate is will not be president, but it would be his running mate. Anyway, what happened is she wrote a book, and every time a book, an anticipated book comes out, you see excerpts in the press. It's how they try to, gauge interest for it, to promote it, to gin up interest for it, to get people excited because they want to listen, they want to see this. So anyway, The Guardian, which is a paper in the UK, by the way, had a little, it's not an excerpt because it talks about it. It has some excerpts in it, but this is what they wrote about this disgusting part of her book. Noem describes calling Cricket, that was her puppy, a 14-month-old puppy, then using an electronic collar to attempt to bring her under control. Nothing worked. Then, on the way home after the hunt, as Noem stopped to talk to a local family, Cricket escaped Noem's truck and attacked the family's chickens. Quote, grabbing one chicken at a time, crunching it to death with one bite, then dropping it to attack another. Cricket, the untrainable dog, Noem writes, behaved like a, quote, trained assassin. Hey, Christy, no, she didn't. She behaved like a dog. Like a dog whose natural instincts have it hunt prey. And I don't know what breed she was, but probably a breed that hunts birds. And you know what? There are dog trainers out there who, if you had paid $100, could have gotten Cricket's behaviors under control. Anyway, back to the excerpt or the Guardian description of the book. When Noem finally grabbed Cricket, she says, the dog, quote, whipped around to bite me. Then, as the chicken's owner wept, Noem repeatedly apologized, wrote the shocked family a check, quote, for the price they asked, and helped them dispose of the carcasses littering the scene of the crime. That was a direct quote from the book. Through it all, Noem says, Cricket was, quote, the picture of pure joy. He's a dog. She's a dog. I'm guessing Cricket is a female, but I could be wrong. Anyway, The Guardian continues, quote, I hated that dog, Noem writes, adding the Cricket had proved herself, quote, untrainable, quote, dangerous to anyone she came in contact with, and, quote, less than worthless as a hunting dog, end quote. Well, apparently she had the kill instinct. You were just a lousy dog owner and trainer, bitch. Sorry. Back to The Guardian. Noem, who also represented her state in Congress for 8 years, got her gun, then led Cricket to a gravel pit. It was not a pleasant job, she writes, but it had to be done. End quote. However, the Guardian tells us, that is not the only tale of Noam slaughtering an animal in her upcoming book. The governor also wrote about how she killed a, quote, nasty and mean male goat because it had not been castrated. Hey, Christy, you should have talked to your buddy. Oh, God, what's her name? From Iowa. She's from Iowa, right? The pig castrating lady. You know, and the one with the Devo hair. I can't think of her name right now. It'll come to me when we're not thinking of her. I can see her. I can picture her. Yeah. You know, I haven't done this in a while, but I've got a little song for Christy. We can all sing along with this one.
I want to tell you a story about the brand new world's biggest asshole.
Asshole.
It's a brand new story about the brand
asshole.
His name is...
Her name is Christy Noam.
And he's the new world's biggest asshole.
Asshole.
Oh, yeah. Yes. What is it? Joni Ernst. Joni Ernst. She was the pig castrator. Joni Ernst would have gladly cut the balls off the sheep. She didn't have to kill it. Or goat. I'm sorry, goat. Goat, sheep. I'm not a farm girl. But yeah, Joni Ernst was her name. She wore Wonder Bread bags over her shoes when she walked to school, don't you know? Because they were so poor and she couldn't afford rubbers, so they say. You know, another big story that I shy away from, and those of you who listen here may have recognized that I tend to shy away from the stories about Israel and Gaza, simply because, well, for a few reasons. One, there's no answer. There's no good answer. Anything I say gets misconstrued to the point where people call me a genocider, which is just lovely. I don't think it's a word, but, you know, you be you. They assume certain things about me without knowing jack shit. And so it's easier just to not go there. I do an hour a day. There's a million other things I could talk about. But don't think it doesn't weigh heavily on me. The deaths of all those people and the fate of the people who were affected by what the Hamas terror organization did on October 7th. On both sides, there's horror, there's sickness, there's disgust, there's hatred, there's not a whole lot of empathy, it seems, but actually there is. So this weekend in my reading, I came across a thread by somebody I had never heard of before. His name is Mo Husseini, as the name would suggest. He's a Palestinian American. And this thread was on Threads, one of many social media outlets out there that I occasionally peruse. And his thread went on for 55 threads. Now, normally, I've got a short attention span here. I would not last long. But I started reading it to see what this Palestinian American had to say. And he spoke to me. He completely spoke to me. I'm going to share a little bit of it with you now. I will post the link to the thread, or actually I'll post the PDF that he put together of this 55 post thread so you can read it, because honestly, everybody should read it. And Mo is going to join me on the show tomorrow so we can have an open, honest conversation. We may even take some phone calls, no holds barred discussion about the shit show happening in the Middle East. But I'm going to share a little bit of it with you to show you why I was so taken by what he wrote. And I'm not reading the whole thing. I'm moving in. He said, let's see. Okay, I'm going to start here on page 2 already. I'm a proud Palestinian American. I care deeply about Palestinian rights to freedom, security, and self-determination. But I am also profoundly aware that true long-term freedom, security, and self-determination for Palestinians cannot exist without creating a reciprocal reality for Israelis. There is no path to freedom that begins with oppression of the other. That's not freedom. That's a Pyrrhic victory that will turn to ashes in your mouth. We are, both peoples, stuck on the world's worst fucking amusement park ride, an eternally shitty and utterly predictable carousel of suffering. There are only three ways off the carousel. One, we kill all the Israelis. Or two, we kill all the Palestinians. Or three, we somehow figure out how to live together. That's it. There is no option four. I might humbly suggest that for anyone with a picogram of human decency, there is actually only option three. There are few, if any, groups in history who have been shit upon by the dominant culture writ large as consistently and enduringly as the Jewish people. General tolerance slash indifference at the Islamic world is about as good as it got. And if you take a look at Europe, you're going to start seeing some deeply fucked up and cruel shit. And all of that is before and quite apart from the incredibly inhuman frenzy of killing that was the Holocaust. Given this very real perspective, it's hard to dismiss the Jewish community's vigilance and sensitivity toward anything that even remotely resembles anti-Semitism as overreaction. The Jewish people have hard-won primary data on what happens with underreaction. And putting my empathy hat on, I'm not sure that I'd react any differently. The Jewish people have valid reasons to want their own nation. He continues. I also want to center the Palestinian people and their traumas. And to be clear, this isn't meant to be an I'll see your Holocaust and raise you a Naka game. I'm not trying to diminish anything or anyone. I'm trying to contextualize. As Palestinians, we paid for historic anti-Semitism in which we largely did not participate until the British showed up. We were forced off land we never left to make way for people who made lives in exile but returned. We were dispossessed of our birthright. We are told that our connection to the land is invented. We are pawns in regional games and geopolitical proxy wars. We live in Bantustans as our occupiers are deferred to by Western nations in their collective guilt. You cannot fault us for resistance to occupation. You cannot fault us for refusing platitudes about the, quote, regrettable loss of life or, quote, potentially indiscriminate bombing of civilian populations or, quote, disproportionate responses. Tut tut. I guess that's like a, yeah. Few of the folks counting off the days since 10/7 for the hostages have mourned for the thousands of the Palestinians held up by the Israeli government in administrative detention. Look it up. The Palestinian people have valid reasons to want their own nation. See what he did? Talked about both sides of this conflict. Then he goes on, my point isn't equivalence. Trauma is not a contest. And there is deep trauma and legitimate grievance on both sides. If you cannot grieve for both peoples, then you do not understand. If your moral concern for innocent lives is measured in a formula that takes the national origin of the innocent dead as a meaningful part of your calculus, then fuck you. You cannot hate and oppress a people and not expect them to fight back. And this is as true for Jews as it is for Palestinians. Those of us who actually want to solve this fucking thing need to acknowledge, recognize, and accept the grievances and fears experienced on all sides. Ignoring this foundational context is useless. It's there. It's a very real reality that is valid and which profoundly affects individuals, their communities, and their choice of governments. It is the water through which we must swim. And then he goes on, a few personal statements that I think are necessary to contextualize my perspective. He talks about the first thing he says is Hamas is fucking awful. Whatever you may feel about legitimate resistance to occupation, there is no legitimate attacking of civilians, period. 10/7 was a war crime, and most of Hamas's operations are also war crimes. You see, I'm stepping back now. I'm not reading from the missive anymore. I'll get back to it. I'm reading, if you're just joining us, from a man named Mo Hassani. His website is mohassani, HUSSEINI.com, mohassani.com. And this is posted there as well as a bunch of other places. Read it however you can. But see, this is what gets me. Yes, I'm an American Jew, a non-practicing secular Jew, but Jewish nonetheless, by heritage, by tradition. And I've said this before, the events of October 7th flipped a switch in my brain, in my everything, because this is the biggest attack on massacre of Jews since the Holocaust, which I have heard about since I was born, which has plagued our people. And as Mo said, that was later on, after thousands of years of Jews being treated as such. So I come to it from that. Mo is a Palestinian American. And so that's what he said. Let us be clear, though, on the fact that Hamas has been supported as a foil to the Palestinian Authority by multiple Israeli governments. That's true. He goes on to say, his next section is, Israel's actions in Gaza are disproportionate. I agree with him. We're going to talk about this tomorrow, so I'm not going to read the whole thing. The next bullet point is, the U.S. government has been an impotent actor in this mess. Yes. Next bullet point is, Israel is a freer country than many Arab states, but it is not a liberal Western democracy. And then he goes, takes on the other side, says, the Palestinian Authority is a fucked up, foundationally corrupt, and deeply broken Bantustan that has little, if any, resonance with the people it ostensibly represents. And that's true. So there's Hamas and there's the Palestinian Authority, and neither one of them are any good. Then he says, the Jewish American identification with the Israeli government, while utterly understandable and logical, given the very real history of Jewish persecution globally, has created weird contortions for people who are deeply liberal and ethical and progressive, as they support a regime which, were it anything but Jewish, they would have a hard time supporting. Let me make this clear. I don't support that regime. But I also didn't support the Donald Trump regime when it was in charge here. Did it make me say, fuck America? Take away everything they've got? Now, granted, we weren't committing war crimes to the extent that Netanyahu's government is, but still, that's where I am. And then his next bullet point is, the Palestinian-American identification with resistance movements trying to, quote, free Palestine, while utterly understandable and logical given the very real history with Israel over the decades, has created weird contortions for some folks who advocate for peace and human rights for Palestinians as they support organizations that are deeply corrupt, hateful, and extremely problematic. Then he adds, if literal anti-Semites and Nazis are drawn to your cause, trust me, you're doing something wrong. And then he says, everyone knows what the solution is. Two states, viable, secure, independent, self-determining, sovereign. Sinwar may not like it. Ben-Gavir may not like it. Hanietch may not like it. Bibi may not like it. But the reality is that we've known the solution for at least 60 years. And the fact that these fuckers oppose it only strengthens its validity from my perspective. The only way we all emerge from this conflict alive and with dignity is through muddling through to coexistence. Muddling through to coexistence. You know, it makes so much sense, and I'm only like on page 5. This goes 11 pages. And yes, he does get into the he does get into the college protests and what's happening there. And make no mistake, everything is fucked up. I mean, that's the way to put it. I'm glad he uses the kind of language that I do because I get it. So I'm looking forward to a real exchange of ideas and opinions and a coming together of two people who are ostensibly on different sides, although not really, because I agree with everything he said. And yet I've got members of my audience who are no longer members of my audience. I've got people who supported my show for years, and I've been doing this for a long time, who've pulled their support and said, I will no longer listen to you. You're a genocidist. Get over yourself. It's not black and white. It's not cut and dry. There's a lot of nuance here. I will post that entire thread on the blog where I post today's show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/4-29-24. Anyone can read it, not behind a paywall. And I encourage you to tune in tomorrow when Mo Husseini is my guest. I never met him before. I never heard of him before I read this thread, but we exchanged a couple of emails and I invited him on the show. I told him exactly who I am. And I look forward to getting to know him, to talk to him. I've attempted things like this before, you know. A few years ago, I had a guy on named, oh God, what was his name? Yossi Klein Ben Levy or something like that. An Israeli who lives, in the West Bank, and it's called Letters to My Palestinian Neighbors. And it's just brilliant. Now, I have tried to contact him since October 7th and invite him back on the show, and I've not gotten a response, which is a bit troubling. I suppose I should go to his website and read his blog. But check my audio settings. People are saying it's low, but others are saying it's okay. All right. So anyway, to be continued tomorrow. Because obviously it's something we're all dealing with, sometimes as me, silently, because of the blowback. But seeing what's happening on college campuses, so we'll talk about that tomorrow. But right now, well, you know what time it is, don't you? There it is. I have a special graphic for today only for the fucking news.
It's time for the fucking news from NicoleSandler.com.
And Jonathan Larson at thefuckingnews.substack.com.
He said a very bad word.
Oh, the language on you.
You're a fucking newsman.
The fucking news.
So Jonathan Larson, I purposely did the bulk of the Christy Noem dog killer story before I brought you on because you didn't seem all that interested in it. Are you a dog person?
I have a dog, and I also have the National Lampoon issue that you have to cover there.
I invoked that cover just a few weeks ago. I don't remember. I used it for a show card. I don't remember what the story was, but it seemed appropriate at the time. But that was a meme that I stole off the interweb. Somebody said, if you don't vote, if I'm not the VP, I'll shoot this dog or something like that. Yeah, so... anyway, thought it worked. So I added it to your brilliant The Fucking News graphic. So Jonathan Larson writes The Fucking News. That was, as they say in sports, an unforced error, wasn't it? I mean, who would even relate that story that she killed her puppy? Horrible.
I think someone might tell that story if they had lived through the last 5 years of a very popular person saying outrageous, cruel things and being rewarded for it.
Oh, like, my God.
I get why she would make that calculus, you know? It was obviously a horrible, thoughtless, lazy thing to do, but I can see the logic there.
Unreal. Just unreal. All right. I'm looking to see is you guys in the chat room, let me know if Jonathan's echo goes away. Again, I'm in Windows 11 hell. I isolated what happens. When I bring someone on, they have this volume mixer, which is you know, actually a kind of a cool feature, except for some reason I've got 20 things open here, and it enables different audio inputs. So I have like you coming through Zoom, but you're also coming through Firefox, and you're also coming through the audio player or something. Is it better now? Yeah. Yep. Echo. Okay. So I got to figure out what I see. This should do it. So John, I think I killed Jonathan's echo.
But is it any echo?
No, yeah, he's confused. Sorry. I think I got it that time. Because then the Wirecast, the program I use to stream audio, had that enabled. That should have done it, though. That should have killed it. Okay, I hope. Anyway, so, you know, I guess we needed a story like that, that it's easy for everyone to jump on and say, what an evil person she is. After living through Thursday morning, did you watch, did you listen to the Supreme Court arguments?
No, I tend not to listen to stuff in real time because there's so much. But obviously I read about it. I've written about it in fucking news. I had a big screed about it Friday morning. Someone pointed out that I think no one else had made one of the arguments I made, which was the existence of the 22nd Amendment with term limits makes quite clear that they thought there was no presidential immunity, because if they had thought that there was presidential immunity, that presidents didn't have to follow the law, then in limiting the terms, you would have had to say, and by the way, presidential immunity, which we all know is in the Constitution, does not apply anymore. The reason they didn't include an exemption to presidential immunity in the 22nd Amendment was because no one thought it was there in the first place. So there's all kinds of, you know, the logic on this is really not difficult. If they come back with a ruling, which I don't think they're likely to, I think they're likely to kick it to the lower court, which I actually argued is a good scenario politically, I think. But if they were to rule with a Democratic president in the White House that the president can break the law, well, okay, that's a pretty clear solution.
But if they do that, I hope they do it before Joe Biden, before he leaves office, so that he can, you know, make them moot.
Here's the existential question I think Biden and the Democratic Party establishment really have not confronted, which is, you have said consistently for years that this man is a threat to democracy, and represents the end of the American experiment if he gets into office.
Yes.
If all of that is true, under what scenario does it make sense for Biden to surrender willingly the White House, lawfully or otherwise?
None at all. Right.
So they keep saying this is this reason is why everyone out there needs to mobilize, get out the vote, and all that. What they haven't articulated is, what exactly are you prepared to do to defend American democracy in the event that not enough voters do it for you? And I don't mean to suggest I know what their answer ought to be. That's why I said they really haven't grappled with it. I have, but I haven't come up with an appropriate solution that's consistent with democratic values.
Right. Well, here's the thing that gets me. I listened to the former guy and his spawn making statements like, if a president can't do his job without immunity, if he thinks he's going to come out of office and be, you know, prosecuted by the guy who, you know, who comes in after him, he can't anybody. There have been 44 presidents. None of them ever had this issue. You know why? Because none of them went into office thinking they're going to use it for their own purposes. None of them thought, "Ooh, I need immunity so I can do whatever the fuck I want." It doesn't work that way. Yet the Supreme Court seemed to go, "Well, you've got a point there."
Well, it's always hard to know before the ruling what their questions meant, whether or not they were advancing an argument or whether they were pushing it out to be shot down. But certainly I think as you say, like the other 44 presidents, they all understood that president is not king.
Right.
So they understood that the job involved being checked, being balanced by the other branches of government. Of course, Trump thinks you can't do the job. He doesn't understand the job. And P.S., this would be the very first job in which he thought that he has held, in which he thought he had to obey the law.
Right. And now he's balking at it, saying, I shouldn't be held. I'm not like everyone else. I shouldn't have to follow the same rules as everyone else. Well, yeah, you should. That's one of the basic, you know, tenets of democracy. But again, he doesn't want democracy. He wants to be a dictator. He idolizes Viktor Orban and Vladimir Putin. And the world's dictators, that's Kim Jong-un.
And again, I think there is some democratic culpability here. I don't mean to say the current Democratic Party, but for decades now, we've had a Democratic Party that either itself actively advanced the power of the executive branch over the other branches, or at a minimum, countenanced it or forgave it after the fact, right? How many conflicts have we had that Democrats went along with despite, you know, violating the War Powers Clause of the Constitution, right? How many times have Democrats saluted the forgiving of crimes, right? Hey, it's great that Gerald Ford pardoned, you know, an openly criminal president. How is that great?
Yeah.
You know, Obama and Holder let the Bush administration skate on horrific abuses of the Constitution.
Yes, they did. And did you hear Brett Kavanaugh? You know, he likes beer. Did you hear him say, you know, this is so many things during that hearing grabbed me. But the lying, you know, before I get to this, I have this Brett Kavanaugh clip I've got to play for you. However, just back to what you said, just because I criticize the Republicans and especially this Republican and the party that now follows him, doesn't mean that I'm saying the Democrats are okay. Doesn't mean that I'm saying, oh, they're free and clear. They've done nothing wrong. I've said nothing of the sort. It's like when I used to bitch about whatever. I'll bitch about any Republican, and they'll say, well, but Bill Clinton did it. I didn't say anything about Bill Clinton. I'm not talking about the Democrats right now. I've been very critical of Democrats. One thing is, you know, they're mutually exclusive. You can comment on one without it having anything to do with the other.
Other thing, and I guess we were going to talk about this, is that I also put at the feet of Democrats is, they, maybe even more than Republicans, have advanced this vision of the American democracy that involves everyone being nice to each other, right? How often have we had to stick our fingers down our throats hearing about Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan having a good laugh over, you know, depriving poor people of federal funds or whatever it might have been, right? The idea that comedy, C-O-M-I-T-Y, between the parties was something to aspire to,
right?
This is a total American fiction, right? The entire DNA of the American project is fighting with each other.
That's right.
And it is an engine that was built to harness the power of self-interest. The whole point is that members of Congress and presidents and the Supreme Court will all pursue naked, ambitious, maybe even greedy motives. And because of how it's balanced and designed, they will have to take into account how the opposing motives of everyone else will affect their outcomes, affect their chances of succeeding. So they were telling us, you need to fight with each other. That's how it works, right?
Well, but it's an adversarial system.
Exactly. In the justice system, right? No one says, you know, it's really important that the prosecution and the defense get along.
It's really important that they not. No.
Something has gone horrifically wrong if the prosecution is saying, you know, the defense is great. Who wouldn't believe these folks? Or if the defense is saying, prosecutor, once again, fantastic point. So upstanding. Like, someone's not getting served there. Right. Those people are supposed to be fighting tooth and nail for their constituents.
Right. And that's okay. It's okay. But it's not okay. But it doesn't need to get to the point where we're threatening one another, where members of Congress are resigning because their families have been threatened because they're not towing the line of dear leader. That's the problem. One of the problems.
Here's what I would say. That's not the problem. I would say that's not the problem. I would say the problem is when the ostensibly educated populace doesn't punish that behavior, right?
Oh, yeah, the system, even more so.
The system is not built to make everyone act great, right?
Nope.
But it is built to give us, the people, the power to punish and impose consequences on those people who do.
Okay, so
if people do what you say and issue threats, the system gives us all kinds of mechanisms for dealing with that. If we don't, that's not the system's fault.
Well, we
don't. That's our fault.
And this leads into this clip from Kavanaugh perfectly, because it's two things. One is doing the wrong thing impacts history, impacts what follows, as you'll hear. But the other thing is the lies. Lying with impunity from Trump on down. I remember when it was the former senator from Arizona who went on the House floor or the Senate floor and said 98% of what Planned Parenthood does is abortions. That's bullshit. That's
bullshit.
It's bullshit. It's just flat out not true, right? And when they were called on it, his staffer, the official response was that was not intended to be a factual response. He said it on the Senate floor in a speech. Yeah, it should have been a factual response. They're not intended to lie on the Senate floor. Well, we've seen now a group of these so-called justices sitting on the Supreme Court who I guess also thought their answers in their confirmation hearings didn't have to be factual responses. And then Brett Kavanaugh in the hearing on Thursday says this.
Intentionally this is and the knowingly lawyer. Hold on. False. That would pollute the legislative
How about,
process.
I think it came up before, President Ford's pardon. Very controversial in the moment.
Yes.
Hugely unpopular, probably why he lost in 76.
Yes.
Now looked upon as one of the better decisions in presidential history, I think, by most people.
Bullshit.
Bullshit! Where does he get that from? Where does he get... And he says it as a statement of fact. Nobody challenged him on it. I'm screaming at the TV. Wait, show me where a majority of Americans think that was the best presidential decision. Are you fucking kidding me?
But in the Washington group mind, I think that's actually accurate.
On the Republican side?
I think it's pretty accurate on the Democratic side, too. Look at what we were talking about with Colin Jost at the White House Correspondents Association, right? Yeah. And he got all kinds of praise for saying that Joe Biden is a decent man. Decency is why we're here. Yeah. Decency is what allows us to be here.
That's a and far again, cry, Jonathan. That's a and, far cry.
Right. But they ate it up. This is what the media and the politicians think is true, that in order for the system to work, we've all got to be nice to each other, as if this is, by the way, a form of American exceptionalism. This idea that America worked because we're all somehow nicer than the rest of the world.
Yeah, but
pretty sure there's a historic record there.
Well, my whole point in that clip was, number one, that he lied. He made up a fact without any attribution and nobody questioned him on it. I want to follow up and say, where do you get a majority of Americans believe that was the best presidential to pardon Nixon? No, because there are many of us, myself included, and a lot of people in Washington who understand that the reason we're in the mess we're in today is because Nixon was pardoned and not held accountable for his crimes. And
That was my point in the newsletter this morning,
yes,
which was decency is why we're here. But if people haven't noticed, no one's really happy with where here is. And if decency got us here, which I would argue, yeah, you're right, it did. Ford's decency, Barack Obama's decency, not prosecuting, Eric Holder's decency, not prosecuting, right? All of this decency essentially combines to form a one-way ratchet so that we just move further and further to the right, because no one wants to be mean by saying no.
Unless you're Kristi Noem with a gun.
Yeah.
So if it's to a helpless animal, you can be mean.
No one campaigns on or gets elected by saying, you know what, I'm going to go to Washington and I am going to be as decent as I can. And my decency is going to be so great that all the people who want your money and who want to turn government into a tool to enrich them at your behalf, I'm going to be decent to them. And that's going to work. That's never happened in the history of anything, because it's clearly ludicrous. But after they get in the office, I don't know why I'm yelling, I should be more decent.
After they get
in office, all of a sudden, oh, now that's a magic thing. Of course, be civil in your adversarial engagements or whatever. But this idea that decency somehow gave us something is absurd and totally ahistorical when you look at the founding fathers explicitly intentionally harnessing self-interest, greed, ambition, and saying all of those are part of the human nature, and we're going to ensure that the nuclear fusion there is going to produce something that is good for the majority of the people.
Yeah, but okay, so I'm not a big fan of CNN. Not a big, yes, sorry, we have...
How dare you?
David's here. Yes, David.
Me? Maybe I misheard it, but I don't think Kavanaugh said majority. I think
he did say majority. Do you need me to play it again? Well, most people is a majority.
It's real-time fact-checking right here on the Nicole Sandler
Hold on. I'm going to find it. I'm going to get it since you insist on coming. Oh, I got the wrong window up. Here we go. It's going to be right around here.
I think it came up before. President Ford's pardon. Mm-hmm. Very controversial in the moment.
Yes.
Hugely unpopular, probably why he lost in 76.
Yes.
Now looked upon as one of the better decisions in presidential history, I think, by most people.
Right. He said most people. Let the buzzer get in there. Okay, he said most people, but that's a majority. Most people is a majority.
But it's not a majority. It's most. That's one thing.
Most is a majority.
Most is a majority.
Obama did not go after Bush and the people who preceded him.
Yep.
And it wasn't because of decency. It was because of spinelessness and Obama not wanting people to go after him for the extrajudicial killings that he fucking authorized.
Well, that's true.
Well, decency had nothing to do with it. Decency, for sure.
Say that again, Jonathan.
Spinelessness often wears decency as a cloak, for sure.
Right.
I'm not standing up for what's right. I'm not fighting my ass off to protect people who were entitled to due process and to protect the Constitution, even though I swore an oath to do that, not because I'm afraid, but because I'm a decent person.
Right. No. But, you know, it's chicken shit. Spinelessness has weighed in. But interesting that neither Obama nor any of them, none of them were worried that some future president's going to come along who's going to be a flagrant scofflaw who he needs immunity in order to do his job. That's just insane. And the fact that they did this and then, you know, making shit up to support your position is also bullshit. Then, so this weekend, Bill Barr sits for an interview with Caitlin Collins. And we've heard Bill Barr. We've seen he is the most, what's the word for him? Wishy-washy, mamby-pamby, anyway, the weather vane, ick. He's ick. That's how I describe him. And this clip from the interview, just, you know what? This is what he is. You were going to say something? Uh-oh, and Jonathan froze.
I didn't freeze.
Oh, you didn't. I thought, were you going to say something before I play this clip?
I didn't say a word.
Okay, here we go.
So just to be clear, you're voting for someone who you believe tried to subvert the peaceful transfer of power, that can't even achieve his own policies, that lied about the election even after his attorney general told him that the election wasn't stolen. And as the former chief law enforcement in this country, you're going to vote for someone who is facing 88 criminal counts.
Oh, yeah. Look. The 88 criminal counts, a lot of those are, and I've said...
Even if 10 of them are accurate.
the answer to the question is yes.
Yes.
I'm supporting the Republican ticket.
But can you say that you're voting for Donald Trump? Because you're not saying his name. You just say you're supporting the Republican ticket.
I've said as between Biden and Trump, I will vote for Trump.
Ick. You know,
so go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go. The ick. That was my comment.
I don't find him wishy-washy. I find him pretty clear. He's threading a narrow lane here. He has said in the past, and he is basically saying still, Trump is not fit for the White House. I'm going to vote for him because Biden is worse.
How?
But that alone is not, on the face of it, illogical or crazy or wishy-washy. And in fact, that's the argument I think you and I have both made to people on the left who say they're not going to vote for Biden. You know, okay, let's assume he is guilty of genocide. Let's assume it is a genocide. And let's assume...
No, let's not, because Joe's it guilty. Isn't. So I'm saying, I think that's a buzzer.
You Sorry. Still have to be in that same position Bill Barr is when you say the other guy is worse.
We should also stop using terminology that doesn't fit, because it pisses me off that we've all adopted this term for
I haven't, but
war
I'm saying
crimes.
Even the people who have,
you have
they
but
should
you
see
have.
The logic there.
I read the fucking news, so you have, but that's okay. No, it's not okay, actually. That everybody has is not okay. It's not genocide. It's horrific. It's horrible what they're doing. That's not genocide. Genocide is the targeted killing of a people because of their race or religion, because of who they are, not because of other factions. That's what Hamas wants to do to Israel. That's genocide. Them shooting rockets over there, that's genocide. What Israel is doing is a fucked up response to a fucked up attack.
Well, I don't want to litigate whatever past usage you're referring to, because I don't have it in front of me. I will certainly say that if I did, that was an error on my part, because I try not to use labels, period. Certainly not ones that are so freighted and so fraught, and certainly not ones that have actual legal definitions, which can be adjudicated, right?
Yep.
We presume people innocent of murder. We should presume innocence of genocide until right. there's some legal establishment of that. So... I don't remember what my bigger point was, but yeah. So to your point, though, Barr did make the claim that Biden is worse, and you said...
How?
Well, how? Right. He does make that case in the interview with Collins. It's a terrible argument. It's very bad, but it's basically like, you know, wokeism will kill free speech.
Oh,
like
God, that's don't be woke. Oh, said. My God. There's that yeah. word. Right. What did we say when we were kids?
Woke, but right. But it's that's the idea yeah, of like, well, free speech is dying, that kind of thing. You know, Mike Johnson going to Columbia to save free speech. It's clearly... you know, beyond the pale in terms of human cognitive rational yep. capabilities. This is
all of
batshit stuff. But that's what happens when, frankly, like, you know, this is one of my big bugaboos, is that the left has a lot of culpability for eroding rationality and yes. the value of rationality and elevating feelings in its stead. And I think that's something that the left really, really needs to focus on reclaiming and undoing before we get out of here. Because as long as everyone's feelings are valid and everyone's opinions are entitled to respect, what's your argument against Bill Barr saying something dumb?
You know what? Opinions are like assholes. Sorry, but back them up with facts. Yeah, everyone's got an opinion. Sometimes those opinions are based on bullshit. Like in the case of party over country, which is exactly what Bill Barr is doing, which is what Caitlin Collins called him out on, and he had to... He is wishy-washy. One second, he loves Trump. He'll risk his legacy to be his attorney general. And the next, he's like, he's not fit to be president. Yeah, he's not fit to be president, but I'm going to vote for him anyway. Come on. Come on,
if
man.
If you think both of them are not fit, then
Stay
you have
home.
To choose the least unfit.
Exactly. I get it. But how anyone can say Donald Trump has any business. See, that's where the disconnect for me. My mind just cannot go there. And anybody who has a half a brain, has an IQ over 50, should be able to see that. And that's what I just don't get.
Barr said something interesting in the interview, and Collins, to her credit, really like unpacked a lot of his thinking on this. This was the discussion about Trump wanting to execute whoever leaked something from the White House.
I have that clip. Hold on. I don't know if it's the whole thing, but here, because we're going to run over a minute or so, but that's okay.
You're so excited clips. When you have the clip.
I love it when I have the clip because, you know, it means my producer did her job. Okay, here's the clip.
I hear from a lot of Republicans who defend Trump saying, well, that's a hypothetical and that's ridiculous. But Alyssa Farah Griffin, who was Trump's communications director, posted yesterday and said that you were present at a moment when Trump suggested executing the person who leaked information that he went to the White House bunker when those George Floyd protests were happening outside the White House. Do you remember that?
I remember him being very mad about that. I actually don't remember him saying executing, but I wouldn't dispute it. You know, I mean, it doesn't sound, I mean, the president would lose his temper and say things like that. I doubt he would have actually carried it out. I don't, you know.
But he would say that on other occasions?
Yeah.
The president, I think people sometimes took him too literally. And you know, he would say things like similar to that in occasions to blow off steam. But I wouldn't take him literally every time he did it.
Why not?
Because at the end of the day, it wouldn't be carried out and you could talk sense.
But just because it's not carried out and you could talk sense into him, doesn't that still mean that the threat is there?
No.
Not intended to be a factual statement. How about anything you say when you hold office needs to be a factual statement? Can we make that a law?
I mean, the Constitution says that's not true. The Constitution says you can lie on the House of Congress, on the floor of Congress.
Well,
right?
We're fucked.
But the point, I think, about Barr is that I can kind of understand if he had one occasion after another where they were easily able to, like, wheel him back in and they heard multiple crazy things, which would all pass, right? The storm would pass and they would wheel him back in. I could understand why that guy today would say, you know what? Everyone's working themselves up about that kind of thing too much. He obviously spoke very hyperbolically in private just to blow off steam or whatever. We always reel them back in. But to me, that's important because what if you're not there?
Yes, and you're talking about the President of the United States ostensibly saying these things, and anybody can hear.
Chief of Staff Steve Bannon?
Oh, God.
What if there's no one there to reel him back
in?
Or
Stephen Miller.
Or Stephen Miller. That's the issue. Right. It's not enough that Bill Barr was able to reel him back in. The issue is, would Trump recognize that on his own and restrain himself from acting on it? Or if he's now got an empowering rather than a restraining cadre and cabinet around him, and he's got the Supreme Court thoughtfully considering whether or not to let him shoot people at random. If there's nothing to hold back a guy who obviously has never been held back in his life,
right,
except in the most extreme circumstances, we should have no faith that he's not going to go to extremes.
Hello.
He doesn't even know what they are unless a freaking cop stops him in his path.
Yeah. No, I just that's where I am. I've got no words. It's like bleh. It's like verbal diarrhea. How anybody can think that this man deserves to hold the position of President of the United States? I don't necessarily agree that the President of the United States is the leader of the free world, but it's an accolade ascribed to that position often. And someone like Donald Trump, as leader of the free world, please kill me now.
Well, we need to stop thinking about it as an accolade, right? We're not giving you an Oscar. We're hiring you for a job, dude.
But that's he's also the one who thinks that Time's Person of the Year is an honor. And
exactly.
It is not. It's the same kind of thing. It's not
exactly.
An accolade. It's saying you influence the news more than anybody else in the eyes of Time magazine. I have to repeat that every fucking year because everyone's going, oh, Trump was honored. No, he wasn't.
Right.
It's not an honor.
Except that the real problem here is that Time magazine backed down on that. This has been one of my pet peeves as well. They backed down on that. 2001 Man of the Year, that was a gimme. That was the easiest one since World War II.
2001, what was it, Bin Laden?
Yes.
Of course. Right. As it should be. He influenced the news more than anyone else that year.
Yeah, pretty clear on that. You know,
and I bet Republicans are going, how could you do that? What? It should have been George Bush. No.
Right. Well, it was Rudy Giuliani, I think. But yeah.
God. Oh, God. Well,
I'm pretty sure it was America's mayor, right? So, yeah, it became this feel-good honor. That's the problem. And this is what I say all the time. Lawbreakers, norm breakers, they're not the problem. They have been present throughout history. We have inherited elaborate systems and vast resources for dealing with them. The problem is when our political and cultural police don't police.
That's right.
That's the issue. That's the problem.
And when the people that are sitting on what is supposed to be the extreme court lie, put party over country, are, as Lisa Graves described them, politicians in robes. Then, Houston, we have a problem.
Well, again, like, my take on this is they're supposed to be driven by self-interest, too. The problem, it seems to me, is that voters are not punishing the people who nominate or confirm obviously unqualified people.
But they should be punishing the people that lie in a confirmation hearing. And there should be, you know, I'm sorry, but Kavanaugh and Gorsuch should be impeached for lying, and Amy Coney Barrett, for lying during their confirmation hearings.
The investigative process into Kavanaugh alone should have been a scandal.
That's right.
Huge scandal, right? Yep. It was outsourced to the FBI, which basically picked and chose which complaints to look into or not. We should have had a vast, robust, Democratic Party-led investigation into all the allegations against him, and to find out whether there were more that people were afraid to come forward with.
And while we're at it, one last thing that I didn't get into that I missed on Friday, because, you know, I tape with Marcy Wheeler in the morning and then the show airs. And the whole time we were talking about the Supreme Court hearing on absolute immunity. This Supreme Court believes that the president shouldn't be accountable to the law because they believe they don't need to be accountable to the law. Certainly that they shouldn't have to operate under the same ethics rule that every other judge in this country must. And there you have Clarence Thomas, the King of the Hill, sitting there on a case he should not even be hearing because his wife should be indicted along with the rest of them for helping to foment insurrection and trying to overturn a fair and free election. The fact that he sits there and nobody none of the lawyers could say, Justice Thomas, why are you there? You shouldn't be hearing this case. And yet neither, apparently, can the other justices or the Chief Justice, or if he can, he's not doing his job, and he should be impeached for not doing his job and making sure that the court is above reproach.
Right. But it all goes back eventually to us.
Yeah, except we have no say over the Supreme Court, except over the Senate we do. And
well, I mean, look, in theory, there could be a mass public uprising that said to every senator that we will vote against you if you don't do something about this right now. Of course, it's a little unfair to blame the entire populace because of states and gerrymandering and the way the Senate is set up. All of these things certainly conspire against, you know, genuine mass vox populi like that. But also, our populace right now is messed up. Right. Yes. There's a demonstrable 40% of this country that wants things and embraces things and loves things that are fundamentally, profoundly, historically, not just un-American, but anti. They are diametrically opposed to the systems and the values. Like when we talk about American values, it's not Judeo-Christian. The defining American value is you're going to fight about stuff. Why? Because everyone has a voice. And because that voice is supposed to get channeled through lots of different venues, which harness the self-interest I was talking about. And then you fight. That's what checking is.
Yes. I wish if we could, you know, invent one superpower, one invention that we could all carry around would be the personal lie detector. That every time you come across someone, and see, this is my problem. It's hard to have an honest debate with, say, a Republican when they won't, you know, admit to sky blue, grass green. You gotta submit the facts. They won't even go there. So it would be an actual bullshit detector. So that if somebody, you know, like Kavanaugh says, most Americans think that pardoning Nixon was the smartest presidential ruling in history, it would automatically just go
bullshit.
Bullshit. Right. And it would be rendered, you can't say that. The bullshit detector outed you.
We do have a bullshit detector. We do have a lie detector. It's the American electorate.
But half of them believe the bullshit.
Exactly. That's the problem. That's the fundamental underlying problem.
Yeah.
And part of that, I say, is the fault of the Democrats or the left. Or,
oh, of course.
It's a broad cultural phenomenon that's gotten us here. It's not just, you know, Newt Gingrich and Richard Nixon and Roger Ailes were bad.
And again, when I criticize the right, I'm not saying that the left is blameless. Far from it. Again, mutually exclusive.
It's basic logic. Logic. Right.
Jonathan Larson, it is always, I love talking to you. I think I enjoy these Monday segments because, yeah, we get to make some bad jokes and we get to poke fun at people. But we talk about shit. So I think that's a good thing.
I enjoy it too. I'll know that's no longer true when you stop inviting me back.
You're invited. We have a standing date every Monday. Yes. As long as you guys keep subscribing to the newsletter at thefuckingnews.substack.com, you can get it for free. You know, if you're poor like me, and you know, and read it and enjoy it, or if you have the funds and can afford to support the journalism that is so important, you can subscribe to the paid version. It's kind of like listening to the show. You can just go along for the ride and let everyone else pay your way, because I do it that way. I'm not behind a paywall for those reasons. But if you can afford it and enjoy it, I hope you pitch in and help support the work we do. That's how we do it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jonathan Larson, we'll talk to you next week. And don't forget, tomorrow, Mo Husseini will be here, and we're gonna have an honest and open conversation, and that's what it has to be. And I don't think he calls it genocide either. So we'll find out. Maybe he does. We'll find out tomorrow. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, guys. Until tomorrow, I'll say go. Have a good night. I'm gonna go try to make my foot feel better. Hope the drugs get here soon. I have gout. Gout. How stupid is that? Gout. It's your big toe gets all inflamed and swollen and really fucking hurts. So I'm waiting for the medicine. So I'm going to go nurse my gout foot and try to.
Your outro took quite a turn there.
I know. It's a stream of consciousness. All right. I'll see you tomorrow. Peace out. Bye.